Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Kelly, I'm president of the committee to the social development committee.
My name is Noble Gomez, president of the committee for the social development.
Good afternoon. I'm Marco Walters from the National Assembly.
Good afternoon. I'm from the
that should be good. I'm Angela Mistral Salter. I've been a nurse. And when I was in the nursing field, I was in children's ward for about 8-9 years and then a gynecology ward. And the biggest problem that then drove me to divert from nursing, I started developing a passion for substance. Because most of the problems of the ladies that were abused, it all starts in this direction. Then I started corresponding with UNISA, so I could be.
Are you telling me you developed that for the area of substance abuse or the substance?
The area of substance abuse. And and in my community as well, it went out of order. My brothers both were addicts, and I then continued corresponding, and it was very difficult though with the nursing, you know, to have your practicals and your study leave. And eventually, I then took a job at Sanka just to get my qualification. And I think on my CV, just where I said, I only graduated in June, so you don't have the last certificate. So I am a social worker now. Honourable members, this is something I want to say. Substance abuse drives me crazy. I have a passion for it. I have seen lives being destroyed, admitted kids in rehabilitation centers which are not recoverable, and they are now psychotic. And there's a lot that has affected our society in general. And I mean, I think in the next two or three generations we're going to have a problem the way I'm experiencing it now in the schools. I work in the schools, I work in the hospitals and clinics, I do presentations, I do training on substances. And what I see is not good. I would like to then, in our province, it is very low on the agenda, substances, the abuse issues, very low on the agenda, on the political arena, even in our departments, all our departments. I'm the chairperson of the forum, and sometimes you only have three people there, and it's really disappointing for the past 4 years. It's like you're stagnant water, but the situation is getting worse. It's not getting better. New drugs are coming in. I established a satellite office in Messina. New office opened a month ago in Palaborwa, and it's a disaster. I realized as one man, I thought I could change it, but I can't alone. Mm-hmm. It's very, very difficult. The first thing that I would like to have focused on is to not only stop, but to reduce most of these campaigns we are having, one-day campaigns, where we spend maybe 50,000 rand on a campaign. That money could be invested more into more education and prevention programs. Because right now, like, we're on a half day, thank God, we may be retrenched any time. So we don't get into our rural areas, we don't get into our schools in, you know, deep enough to educate these children to change. When they get to us, they're already in the trouble. So it'd be better or nicer for me to get them at a younger age. My worst case scenario was when we had an 8-year-old girl who was pregnant and using substance, and the parents are just not interested. So we don't get to that age. We think that the primary schools have come to a stage where it's not necessary to speak to them. My 12-year-old boy, just flew and had sex with the dogs, stuff like that. And you go to a psychiatrist, no one is interested. Our inpatient is both now, but it's not opening, it's not non-functional. We only have this one outpatient, and we cannot manage the whole problem. Our doctors in the hospital, but no one is detoxing our clients, like yesterday, and I'm still concerned. I'm always on the warpath. When everybody sees me, it's like she's always complaining. We've got no way of detoxing them. We've got no way of helping our clients. And if I could do something. Yes, but the clients in general.
Yeah.
Even some of our social workers, you know, don't know what to do with the clients. We actually refer them to Mpumalanga or to Gauteng.
Yeah.
And it's a waiting process of nearly 6 weeks. And then he has to be detoxed before he goes, and hospitals are just not equipped to do that, and they don't know the regimes. But my biggest concern right now is the schools. Our high school, the primary schools, are getting totally out of control. One area you cannot even buy glue, you need a permit from the police station to get, go and buy glue. So it is out of control. And if you get into the political arena and in our secretariat, our forum, which is social development, has blocked me in so many areas that I sometimes become very discouraged, because it would be, Angela, that's my comrade, you know, don't go to comrade this and that and that. As I always tell you, I'm not a politician, I'm here to serve the community, because it's going down here. It's not getting better. Teenage pregnancy is going up. Things are being all focused in one area, but there's, like, let's say for HIV, all the focus will go in there, but when you come a substance, it's like nobody's listening. The drug of choice in the high schools now is Miaope. Alcohol severely more in the Mopani district, because the youngest girl was 8 years that was pregnant over there. Tabazimbi area also, we've got Miaope. The new one now in Pulukwani, the town itself, a tuk-tuk has emerged, and cat and Thai has also come now the market. Thai is like heroin, but a white one. And it's a stronger, very much stronger. It's THAI. So it's stronger than the heroin. And they inject it. So that is now coming out. And we're having, like, the young girls then go and to the Nigerians and take it on death. Two have now been murdered. If they can't pay them or they don't want to prostitute, they run to the churches. As soon as she walks out of the church, they get shot. If I could also change something, I would have brought Sanap to come back. It really helped to have a special bureau task just to assist in substances. I've been raped because of this. Because the passion just is a very heavy passion for me. Because we're 3 social workers, but we've been subsidized for 1. And then I was the community development manager, and then I would do the whole province. So 2 weeks ago, I'm no more a manager. I must now be a marketing agent to the workshops. If I don't market and get workshops to do substance abuse. So I want to see the salaries. So things have changed in the meanwhile with the center situation and the funding.
Because there is a funding
on the funding. Yes. So.
Can you tell us what you know about CDA?
What I know about CDA? I know that it's a statutory body which hasn't been there before, but it's been there now for 4 years that I know about it, and since I've been on the forum. And that their job, what they're doing is the National Drug Master Plan is established, and they have to monitor and just see that the instructions they give out, it comes from the Minister of Social Development, has to be implemented. And can I take it from the bottom? The local drug action committees will then give a feedback to us, to the forum, and the forum will back to the CDA, and the CDA will be monitoring at all times what is being done in the provinces, give reports over to them, and will stay in contact, any challenges, any problems. But the CDA is basically also looking with substances. They're not involved with HIV or any other areas or social issues.
Yeah, I was listening to you when you were speaking and telling us about you. I don't doubt your experience. It's like you've been in this area that has something to do with substance abuse. And you know about it. But what I'm worried about is that the awareness, like how many people know about CDA? What can you do if, let's say, you're taken as one of the some successful taken as one board member? What are the turnaround strategies that you can do to make sure that CDA is known in the whole of South Africa?
I will start full force of my province. And I've been trying for 4 years to get to see our premier. I would like it to start at a political level. Then I know I will have a much broader buy-in through the media also. And in South Africa, more marketing, more media, more awareness should then be. And through the children. You know, like if you could find a five-year-old knows the police number, because the police go and do that. And that's exactly how we should tackle it. In the same area that those 5 year olds also should know that there is something. So I think if I go to the mayor and tell him of the CDA, what you're talking about, and that that shocks me. And to change that concept, and it will have to be from the younger ones and even our elder ones.
Then what are the key issues affecting families and communities regarding
Firstly, poverty. The money is being used for the alcohol and for the drugs. And then dysfunctional families, you know, some kids that are being even sold for prostitution just to get the money for the drugs. Some problems is children. Bodies are mutilated, sold to traditional doctors to get money just for substances. Domestic violence. And not only, like we used to say in the olden days, females being abused. Even now, things have changed. Males are being abused also. And women just feel they have more power and more strength when they take a substance. Things have totally changed. Another one that I'm experiencing a big problem with is gambling. And HIV, the health issues are first on the list. Psychosis. People are becoming, the mental institutions don't have space anymore. So that's affecting our communities. The high dropout rate, children not going to school anymore. Memory loss. Even if they're at school, we have a boy of 25 years at school. In grade 10, he can't finish, and he wants his matric. Promiscuity, sexual behavior, adultery, just getting out of hand. Suicide is a big problem also in our area. We've got a railway. And don't understand, but everybody stands on the radar, so I don't think in a normal mind you can go and stand from a suicide there. It has to be a substance. That's what's happening with our youth in my area, the railway.
Thank you. I would just like to know regarding the council village by the CDI, what can we do to ensure that the CDA accounts for its work? So what I'm trying to say is, what would you do when you are perhaps on this board to ensure that the CDA accounts to the Minister for its work and everything is in place? Now, how would you do
that? I must admit that's a tough one because every time I've been blocked. I would have to, if I've given in reports or if I've asked certain questions or submitted any suggestions, I would then have to go back to the CDA, ask them to give me, submit it in writing, ask them to give me feedback in the second time. If they don't, submit it for the second time, and I'll have to bypass them then if I get no response from them or... But I don't know much, how much pressure I can really put on them. But, yes, I'd have to go through them.
Thank you. Other more questions?
And then, so, what of the key functions of the CDA is to advise the minister on new approach and maybe a tactical intervention on the to combat the what I want to find out is how would you ensure data quality and integrity in advising the Minister of Social Development and reporting to Parliament.
Data quality. That's a big problem we are having. I've been complaining about it just last year. The data is so secretive and whoever has it, the record keeping and the reporting, everybody keeps for himself. So we actually don't have a correct statistics. We don't have a correct data because if you go to SUPS, no, they will just give you this what they did at the school. You ask them, but who's on the border post? The entries into the country, well, where's that set? You never get it. Get to intelligence is top secret. Somewhere there's a silence that has been hidden and no correct data is actually reaching the minister. It's getting lost in the pipeline somewhere. So I would then, if I had the powers, then would have had every department submit their data then for a true reflection, because it is not a true reflection currently. Everybody is keeping his and hiding his. And so when whatever is coming to your portfolio is not a true reflection, because I'm not even getting a true reflection. So what I would then suggest, somehow that there's from the top structure, that there would be a measurement of some accountability of their statistics, because it's bothering me. I've been in Messina and they can't give you anything of what's going on there, but you see what's going on. If you walk around at night and take photos, but nobody knows what's going on. Nothing is in writing, but everybody's just sitting in the salary and you're wondering what's going on. They take you to a warehouse as big as this, full of illegal cigarettes. You come back next month and ask, excuse me, where were the cigarettes? How much boxes were there? It's gone. And then say, sorry, who are you now to ask all these questions? Well, I'm just the mother. So there's no true reflection coming really through.
Thank you. I'd like to know from you how you would improve the standing or the authority of the board if you're a member of the board. Because currently, you know, the department has to report back to the board with the reports every year, and they often miss deadlines, which undermines the authority of the board. Then the board reports back to us in Parliament. So, how would you improve? approved the authority of that board, understanding. And then you mentioned, that's just generally, specifically you mentioned you'd like to see the re-establishment of the narcotics unit.
Yes.
You used the acronym for it, but you know, Sunlock. So how would you then motivate that if you were a member of the board as well? How would you go about it?
I would motivate it by going back to South African police services and getting the real true reflection and statistics. And the problem is, like, I haven't seen an officer from Home Affairs at any of our meetings, neither SARS, in 4 years. And those people are having the true immigration, they've got the true mummy.
At the provincial
forum. They are having statistics that we do not have, and we've never had them in the 4 years. So, if then the CDA can then give us some authority or some powers to go back and, or just a letter and ask for those statistics, then we can give Parliament or you guys back and say, this is the true, real problem. And if we cannot handle it anymore, but if we can have the narcotics unit coming back, we can have a better assistance in this direction, in that direction, with numbers, figures. Mm-hmm. But without figures, we're not going anywhere. We're going to look at it and say, okay, now we must establish a budget for this unit. To do what? Because we don't have a sustainable amount of figures and reports for us to do something about it. So it just seems it's unnecessary waste of money or taxpayers' money. The first question, sir, can you just repeat it again?
It's just how generally you would improve the authority of the board, or the central bank authority, that take it more seriously?
It's a bit difficult one. I would speak, I'm always speaking, and people don't actually listen to half of what I say, but I would continue speaking and playing my point, writing letters, improving the, yes.
So doing the function that also giving it more tea. How do you have one or two ideas how to do it? That's what the honourable member is
asking. I don't know how I'll be able to then influence them to such an activity, because I'll just be a normal board member. I won't have a thought. I don't know how far my powers will then stretch. Will I be able to just use the constitution and then say I've got the right? I'm not actually sure to that extent, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Uncle Dabu. Yeah, Uncle Dabu. Uncle Dabu.
So, well, I know the question. In the end of the past, this seems to be isolated to its own people. Now I know that it's widely heard about. The petrol is all the communities in the main town. But the issue here is so far, on the ground, we've not seen that. I don't think you actually said, other sources, but it seems that there's a lot of resources going into the awareness about HIV issues. And to some extent, that is effective, that is true. But what are the efforts that are. We've not seen a lot of. For instance, awareness about substance abuse. I'm trying to think that we've been well in the last 10 years or not too much.
Nothing honorable.
I've not seen much going into that. Even when I've been in local government, for instance, people coming us, advising us about what role local government can play in combating the problem or something like that. We don't remember in the last 10 years. politically for the building people to try this kind of campaign. So I mean, if you are in the HD, in what ways do you think you can capacitate the CDA to carry on such a campaign?
Okay, firstly, what I've been trying now for this year was the media, different radio stations in all the different languages. I've been visiting, I've already visited 3 different provinces since May. To go to the mayor, I spoke to him and he said he has no idea what, I mean, the draft master plan is. I should come and explain to him. And I'm having a bit of difficulty to get an appointment. And I asked also, I wrote a letter to the Premier's office where I would like to be invited when they're having their exco, the executive, where I can present to them what this is all about. The mini drug master plan and the national drug master plan. Because what I realized, I spoke to the MEC last year, which was then, MEC of Health was Dikelezi. So we've agreed. We would even go and remove the Dacha for June the 16th, Mandela. We agreed on the program. And when I came next time to office, she was no longer there. A new gentleman is now there. I need to meet the new honorable and start all over again the process. But I would still like to get to our local parliament and explain to them right there, starting there. Because, you know, I think that maybe some of our politicians are not really actually aware of how big the problem is and what is being done here and what does the national master drug master plan says. Because even if I show them, okay, this one, do you have any, I don't know what it is. And I don't get into that lost platform of being stopped every time. That's the first step I would then do. The media, I've already gotten ahead with them, the radio stations, up to Palabora, up to Messina. I started to Taba Zambia from Alicaraz last week. And got the mines on board, Eskom on board. It's just to get strategies and plans and budget to start doing all this. So that is my intention.
Loving the change actually more people.
just in terms of lobbying, to look at the TDA itself, how do you see that if you look at the I want to use your experience you had with the Thai influence now you drug military and like you said stuff and I open, you know about the I don't know about Thai. How would you use your knowledge? Because you actually you have community, but you have a strong community development background.
Yes.
And in terms of the work that you've done in the community and the real problems of the community. But if you become part of the CDA collective, what do you think would be some of the major, just maybe one major challenge that you think the board as a collective should challenge?
Research and getting correct data, because it should be the first and most.
Is that from all the stakeholders, or?
Especially our 14 departments, let's start with the government departments before we go to the private sector. That should be very much important for us, because if we don't get all that research, we just take someone, admit him in psychiatric ward. Why? Never get written why. Was it DACA? Was it a problem, a narrative problem? That one would be the first one I would then say. And
like during HIV, when people visit the clinic, there's always data available on how many people visit
the clinic. Yeah, we should do exactly the same with the substance. Then we know where we're going and what are we heading to and how is it getting better, is it getting worse, are we winning the game or are we just going around in circles, or we should change our approach, as I've been saying now, the approach of this campaign, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We have a campaign, everybody comes, eats and answer the lecture for trust, and then they go home, they forgot what has been said. But if you've taken that money and went to school and did peer counseling or did a parenting skills program, because they've stayed in that community for a longer time than just one day event.
Any other questions? Any questions from the support? Anything? Well, we're not the support question.
If I am on this, what is it going to be, a committee?
Board. Yeah.
Okay, board member. What would be expected of me exactly to be done from you, lay honourable?
It's what's in the act. So what's in the act, that's what we want to do. And what you've told us, so that's basically to
I think what you're doing
something else I can just say. If one day you do something, can I say?
I don't know what you're doing.
If you do, we had Sadek come over to Kulugwane. Yes, the Sadek lady. She came to there.
What
was that? South African Depression Anxiety Group.
Oh.
No, not that one. Maybe I'm saying it wrong. But you know the group that came there, and because they received some money from some department where they had to come and do a road show or some training for a while. I just would appreciate it because the money they said came from national. I just want to ask, next time please just inform us something. Oh, okay.
asylum, so we are not part of the package.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so you have the executive, and then you have the parliament, and then you have the judiciary. So we are part of, so we oversee the work of this.
Okay. No, okay, then I cannot speak about it yet.
Yeah,
and this comes to the other board.
Thank you.
But one should be here. Check again.
Thank you. One of the candidates is here in Africa, but the other one is still on the flight, and it's the last candidate to be here.
Hi everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you. Actually, I think tap water is good enough. We shouldn't use bottles. But that's a discussion that takes place around the world.
Welcome to this interview.
Thank you so much.
I'm Yolanda Mota, which is a policy committee on social development in national politics. With me today, I have members from the NCOC, and they are from the Committee on Social Services, and also members from the national politics. So I'm going to ask the member on my left just to introduce himself to you.
My name is Tao. From Limpo. Still in the National Council Program.
Good afternoon, I'm Michael Wilson. I'm serving the National Assembly.
Afternoon, my name is Tao Kulaiki. I'm a National Council of Programs.
My name is Willem Faber, and I also represent the National Council of Programs.
Substance abuse, and I gravitated to it quite by accident. I was involved in city politics, local town council, and I served mostly on the committees for law enforcement, which was then traffic before the Metro City Police things came into effect and the new acts. So it was traffic and safety and enforcement, and the local health committees, which dealt with the city clinics and so on, and also at that stage the development of the district health system. And I, as a member of the council, didn't like smoking in the council chamber, and it didn't make any sense to me. I'm talking about the early 80s, and then it began in earnest in 1986, which was 1 year when I served as mayor. It didn't make any sense to me that we invited young mothers with infant children to come to our clinics to be weighed and inoculated and so on, and there were mothers and nurses smoking. And this is before we even had health warnings on cigarette packets. It just didn't make sense to me because it seemed to be a risk. So I started a process which was formalized in 1989. It took 3 years. 1989, Edenvale, which became Les Tabong, passed a resolution to ban smoking in all municipal buildings, which was quite a victory, and that was the start of it. And then when the Tobacco Act started to become amended in 1997, there were parliamentary processes. I sent a letter to the portfolio committee at that stage asking if I could make a presentation to the committee, which I did. And in the process, helped one or two of the committee members to stop smoking. Then a post became available, a vacant at the National Council Against Smoking, which I applied for and was appointed. And that was the start of it. And now, really, what I deal with in my day-to-day work is the single most used drug in South Africa, and that's nicotine, through cigarettes and smoking and tobacco. And it's the gateway drug, in our view, to all the other drugs. It's a legal drug. It's a legal drug that does harm, because there are legal drugs like antibiotics that do good. But all the other drugs like heroin and cocaine and baka are illegal drugs. Nicotine is the legal drug. But it is the most abused drug in South Africa. And you sell about 22 billion cigarettes a year in South Africa. And the initiation of children into smoking is very sad. The other measure I use is that in rehabilitation centers, the population average percentage that smokes, it varies in provinces and men and women and so on, but the average is 22% of adults smoke. In rehabilitation centers, when people go for treatment for all sorts of drugs, whether it's tick or heroin or cocaine, the figure's about 99%. Very seldom does any of those hard illegal drug users not smoke. And so that I see as the gateway drug. And if we can treat that in one way, we're dealing in a small way with all the other drugs. And that's my background. It's just it's been an exciting journey for the last... I joined the National Council in 2001. And originally it was a two-year contract. And now it's 2012. It's been great, a very exciting journey, because we're winning. Slowly, slowly we're winning.
In terms of the CDA currently, if you were to be the first to be a CDA board member, I don't know how much you know about the work of the CDA, what aspect of a new country could you bring to the CDA?
If I may take a step back, my involvement with the CDA was through my work with the National Council Against Smoking. And the first five-year drug master plan mentioned things like other drugs and alcohol, but there was no mention of tobacco, smoking, or nicotine. And my interactions with the CDA many years ago brought about a change in the drug master plan, and it is now mentioned. And I think that would probably like to be my focus, because it's the small things that lead to the illegal drugs. And there are many things. I mean, there's social inequalities, there's poverty, and there are problems. But the one thing that seems to lead so many children to the other illegal drugs, to get a hype, to get a high, is the nicotine and tobacco. Nicotine has a unique way of working on the brain, that it actually over time alters the structure, the physical structure of the brain, to make it more readily receptive to drugs like nicotine, and that leads to the other harder drugs. I haven't thought about it in depth, but that's probably where my focus would be. The bottom line for me, whichever direction we take, if, you know, my contribution is a desire to serve society and community, and in fact, weirdly enough, that's how I got involved in politics, in town politics. I used to serve on school committees, which were then called PTAs, I think they're now called governing bodies, and tennis clubs and charity organizations. And one day I thought, after many years, I mean, I started when I was 12 or 13 years old. After many years, I kind of got tired, I had enough, and I thought, I need a break. And I was about 30. And one day I opened the newspaper in Edenvale, Mr. Waters would remember this, that we had in Edenvale a lady mayor. And I looked at that and I thought, wow, that's great. We've got a woman as a mayor, And that's another way to serve the community. So I got involved in an election and got a seat on the council, and I found myself serving the community, no longer on PTAs and committees, but in that aspect. So my desire is to do some, you know the line I can best quote, John Wayne, when he played Davy Crockett in the film The Alamo, he left the battle. He left the battle. And he was talking to his girlfriend, Palaka, who said to him, what's going to happen to us? And he made a long speech about whether his life was worth the pain of the mother that bore him. Whether he said, I got involved in fights and sometimes stomped on people and sometimes got stomped on, and he made this very nice speech, written for a script, obviously, for the movie. And it ends off, he said, what I have to do, Palaka, I have to do a little good in this old world. And he went back to fight in the Battle of the Alamo. He got killed. And that's probably for me. I want to do a little good in this whole world. Whatever aspect it is, whatever direction it takes within the structures and the legal framework of the Central Drug Authority, I'm happy to do that. My experiences from tobacco control, fighting a big, rich, relentless enemy, the cigarette manufacturers around the world, and they're huge in South Africa, make a lot of profit. That would probably be my focus, because that's where my experience is, that's where my knowledge is. But for me, it's to do a little good in this whole world. Bottom line, whatever we do, I think whatever the Central Drug Authority does, whatever processes we follow, whatever mechanisms we use, bottom line, save lives. That's what I see at the end. We save lives. We get fewer children getting onto smoking, getting onto other drugs, whatever they are, and how we deal with those problems and the social inequities is something we have to do. End of the road, bottom line, save lives. In the
medium to long.
Very immediate problem because of the tragedies that we see with methamphetamine and things that I understand are quite readily and cheaply available, like TIC, which is a hugely addictive drug. It is a very immediate problem, and I think we have to address that. And it's a multifaceted problem, because it's not only the Central Drug Authority, it has to do with the police and social, I called it inequities earlier, but it's the social problems and the policy, poverty that needs to be addressed. One of the things, and I've not thought about it in great depth, it's something that I will have to apply my mind to if I'm appointed, is that there are other countries that have different systems. Of course, they have different cultures as well, but they have different systems of managing drugs. Holland is probably the most well known, and the other is Portugal, and I've not read recently about how they're managing and what their successes are, but I understand that they have different approaches that are meeting with some degree of success. But we have to be careful that those are different cultures. So I don't have the answer, but it is an urgent problem. It needs immediate attention. but at the same time you can't neglect the long-term goals. It's a package. It's the same with the work I do in tobacco control. There isn't one thing that reduces the prevalence in smoking, and it's been going down since the early 90s, where a much larger percentage of adults smoked. I mean, it was like 47%, and we're now down to that 22%. It's health warnings, it's the ban on advertising, it's denormalizing smoking by making no smoking indoors. It's a package of things, including education, and I think it's the same with the other drugs. It's not one thing, and it's not only the short term, it's a spread.
If you appointed to the board, how will you make the CBA more relevant? Because currently it does lack credibility in some sources. For example, many departments are the first to report back to the board. The annual reports fail to do so on time, which leads to the board then reporting that back to Parliament, which gets them into trouble with us. So, I mean, that's just one example, but how would you make them more relevant and that people actually pay attention to them? And secondly, I mean, you talked about legal drugs, nicotine, but you didn't mention liquor. So, I mean, what's your view, if I may ask, on banning advertising on for liquor and that, similar to smoking? Let me just ask your view.
My personal view is I think it's necessary. Because alcohol does exactly the same thing. If you look at television now, there's just a huge force of alcohol advertising because they know that the department is looking at banning it. And my feeling in the department is that the leaning is towards, excuse me, a complete ban. Partial bans just don't work. We know that now from tobacco control, where we had a partial ban on smoking in indoor places where we permitted a smoking area. For health purposes, it doesn't work because smoke gets out and the smallest exposure to secondhand smoke can be harmful. So my personal view is that a complete ban, it would be the right thing to do. We'd need to look at health warnings. It's exactly the same as the tobacco industry. The products are slightly different, but the enemy, as it were, is huge, powerful, rich, relentless, full of resources and money. And it's the same thing. So health warnings, they already... There's no difference between them and the tobacco industry. If you look at a bottle of beer or, I think, wine as well, they're little health warnings, you know, drinking is bad for you and so on. And they're trying to portray, oh, look at us, we're the good guys, we're already putting on health warnings and you, Parliament, haven't told us to do it yet, but we're doing it. So they try and create the illusion that they're the good guys, but actually they aren't. So it needs to go the whole hog. You need to denormalize. If you look at the advertising of alcohol, it's all lifestyle. They don't tell you anything about the product. It's not like a car. This is a 1.5 liter motor car. It's got ABS brakes. It's got 5 gears. They tell you nothing about the product. It's all lifestyle. And that's the danger. So a complete ban would be my personal view.
And the first part of the question about making the CDA more effective and relevant?
I think partly that has to do with building relationships and building commitment, but that needs to be done with enthusiasm. If you get anyone enthusiastic about what they're doing, and I know it's a difficult thing in bureaucracy, where too many people just have jobs and kind of wait for their pension, they wait for their retirement, my view would be to build relationships and build enthusiasm for what they're trying to do. And that's why, what I said earlier, what are we doing here? Saving lives. And if you can get people excited about that, then all the reporting is a painful process. I mean, we do it at the National Council. I hate it. It's terrible. But it has to be done. So if you get them enthusiastic about, what are we going to do here? We're going to save lives. This becomes exciting. And the reporting is just a little part of the process if you build those relationships. And the CDA has an obligation then to report back to Parliament, and that's in that relevance. In the other relevance, I think that we need to have a little bit more of status building almost of the CDA as having its own image in the media. It needs to be seen as a product and have its own image, have a good media spokesman, somebody who can come across well on radio, on television, And whoever that is, by the way, I can teach them some techniques how to do that, just because I've got a little bit of experience in it. So if we build the profile, the public image, so the public likes it, the media finds it good and interesting and exciting, because drugs is almost passé. Like, what are they going to say that's exciting about drugs and publish something that's new? Because journalists want to write stuff that their editors are going to like and their readers are going to like. So if we lift the image of the CDA, mm-hmm. the public image and the media image, part of the process.
Thank you.
It makes me sound like a grandfather. I have no problem if everybody calls me Peter. In fact, if I address you, it's Sipo, is it?
Yes.
I didn't catch your surname, so I would have to call you Sipo or Mr. Sipo. But Peter, please, thank
okay.
you.
Okay. There is a widespread notion that a substance abuse is not entirely responsible for all social ills, but rather contributes to the problem. I want to ask you this question. Do you believe, do you agree with this notion?
No, as you put it, no, I don't. Because it's not that substance abuse leads to social ills. I think some of the social ills leads to substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a two-way traffic. And that's why you have to deal with it all. You can't focus on one thing. It's a package of actions that have to be taken. Some in the short term quickly and others planned over the long term. And that's why you have a 5-year drug master plan, which mentions alcohol. It's two-way traffic.
Question would then be on that. How would you ensure that the information, the quality of information that you gather as CDA and the integrity of that information in advising the minister? In the minister and parliament, that information is it's quality information.
It's one of the things.
I'm asking this question.
Yes.
There will be complaints that there's not sufficient evidence on the information that you would provide to the media. That's one.
Yes. I think there are various sources, and it's absolutely essential that the integrity, and that's a very important word, that the integrity of the CDA and every person working on the board and other staff members have a level of integrity that is unbreakable. Again, I can only refer back to what I do. At the National Council Against Smoking, we're very, very careful about what we say, that the facts are accurate. You need to get research data which is available around the world. We use a lot of research in tobacco control that's available around the world. In South Africa, you have to have good local research always. And there are bodies, for example, like the Medical Research Council, and they have divisions that deal with this, and research units. And it might be necessary that the Central Drug Authority, that we give them a target of what information it is that we want. We say, this is what we want to know. And if you outline the results that you want, then they can design a research program to produce the information. Not to manufacture it, but to find the real information. So that you can say, these are the problems, and then you can look at, because the research will always tell you not only what the problems are and the size of the problem, but the cause of the problem very often comes out in those sort of researches. So Medical Research Council is one of the bodies. There are other research units, I would guess, but that's one that I think you can rely on the results that they produce. The problem with it always begins with the questions that you ask. That's the key issue, is when you go out and do a survey or try and get the results for research and information, the questions that you ask have to be right and totally non-confusing. They have to be clear, so that the information that you get is clear and the conclusions that you extrapolate from it are clear. So it goes back to basics, the questions. I've seen research papers that are, the basic questions are just incomprehensible. But there, it needs to be good. Whatever you deal with needs to be good and accurate and have that integrity. It's a very important word. So when you talk to the media, they say, whoever speaks to the media on behalf of the CDA, they can say, we don't question that. We trust it. That guy says 2 and 2 is 4, then it's 4. We don't have to check it out.
Look, I would like to know, obviously, thank you very much. I would just like to know, obviously you've got a lot of skills which you've encountered upon over the years, but I would like to know, how would you apply these skills? Because obviously you said you've got the experience, but how would you apply those skills to give this board more teeth, as a lot of the government departments don't adhere to refine the report in time. But how would you apply in practical your skills to get those in time?
Well, the first part of the answer is that I've already answered is it's building relationships and building enthusiasm so that people enjoy what they do and they see that the end result of what they do has a value. And that has to be in the value that they accept intellectually and then internalize emotionally. If you get that enthusiasm, that's, I think, more than half of the job. The other is, I think there need to be departmental consequences. There needs to be a process. If someone needs to make a report and they don't, you know, if they get sick and genuinely sick and they work for a week and they're late, you need to take care of those things. Or a child gets sick. Those things happen. But taking into account all the variables, if someone has the obligation in terms of their employment contract to write a report, and there are deadlines to that report, there need to be consequences if they don't comply. I'm not sure how we would apply those consequences because they're employment contracts and they're acts that deal with employment within departments. But I think I hate the cliche, but it is the carrot and the stick. For me, the big part is the enthusiasm, the desire to participate in something that has the end result of saving lives. But there need to be consequences. Whether it's no salary increase at the next increment process or whatever it is, there's a consequence. And it's like you commit a crime, the consequences will lock you up.
Having experience or having worked with many NGOs and the institution, especially in crime, how can you rate the crime committed by people which as a result of to either smoking or substance abuse?
I think it's terrible, atrocious. The levels are too high. The problem for me also starts before that. There's a whole process of what I think is a moral breakdown in South Africa when it comes to adherence of the law, and it happens at all levels. Sad to say, it's like my friends, my colleagues, my associates, people with homes and jobs and families and cars, who at some level or another think that crime is okay. For example, a hijacker, and it's been said in court, a hijacker says, you know what, I just take the car, I never harm the driver. That's kind of okay for him then to steal the car, which it isn't. Now what happens at our level is that, and I'm sure you have it amongst your own friends, sometimes when I talk to people I say, I guarantee you that half the people in this room committed a crime in the last week. A crime? I said, oh no, we're all honest. I said, oh really? You didn't talk on your cell phone while you were driving. And most of them will say, oh yeah, but they don't see that as a crime. And the reason it's a crime is because talking on a cell phone is in itself innocuous. But it's you lose focus when you're driving, and I ride a motorbike. So I'm very conscious and texting. I've seen them. If I see a car ahead of me and it's a little out of control, then I get there, they're either talking or texting while they're driving. And they say, no, that's okay, I'm not harming anyone. That's their excuse. I'm not harming anyone. In actual fact, they have a huge potential to harm someone by losing control of the car, losing focus, and having an accident and killing someone. And that for me is the problem. Too many people at all levels justify a crime because, I've had people say to me, but combi taxis do it, so why can't I? So I say, okay, you want to be an idiot, make a criminal offense, then you can try and justify it. I don't see the justification. So it's more than just the crimes as a result of jobs. I think it's the whole society thing. And if we can raise the moral, ethical bar, where people say, you know what, it's not okay to talk on a mobile phone while you're driving. It's not okay. I hate it, actually. I shouldn't use such strong emotional words. When somebody parks in a bay reserved for the disabled, I don't like that. But I talk to them, I make a fuss. I mean, I can tell you what I say because I have fun doing it. But I don't like that. But they say, leaving a baby in the car, the same thing. They park, they leave a baby in the car seat, 6 months old, and they go, I say, excuse me, you can't do that. They say, no, I'm just going there quickly. So yeah, and when you come back and your baby's dead because it's 37 degrees in the car or something, everyone has an excuse, and we have to kind of remove those excuses. And it boils down in the end to the other crimes, like car hijacking, and the crimes that result because people want money for drugs, and people involved in drug marketing and sales, and even manufacturing. And you see some of the drug busts that we've had. I mean, they are apparently ordinary people who would be friends of ours under normal circumstances. They've got a house in Bryanston full of money and drugs and raw materials they're making. And you know, if you met them at a school sports event, you'd think, nice guy. He's making drugs. In his mind, I'm just making money for my family. It's a huge problem, but it's... I don't know all the answers, like. But it needs...
Could I ask, because most of my questions you've already raised, the questions that I have in mind, but there's only one area which is bothering me, that in most cases now the substance abuse is more in the rural areas. You find schools in the rural areas who found this problem of substance abuse. And I want to know, in case we become lucky, what would you advise? I know the role of the board is not implementing, but you make sure that you monitor implementation by the department. And you also mentioned that a candidate before you talked about at a level of local government, mayor. There's nothing that they're doing concerning this problem that is facing all of us in South Africa. What would you advise the minister concerning the outreach program? Because I could feel when people talk, CBA is not known in most areas. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's why I said initially you want to raise the public and media profile of the CDA so that it has a good image and that people trust what the CDA tells them. I don't have enough information at my disposal, but I think that the drug problem is not only a rural problem. From what I hear, it's in the cities, that there are drug dealers at expenses of schools selling drugs. And we like to characterize them in certain ways, but they're drug dealers, whoever they are. The problem in the rural areas is that those are the poorest areas. So that the drugs, the same as cigarettes, and in fact our view has always been that smoking causes poverty. Tobacco farming causes poverty. Because it not only takes money that could be spent on food and shelter and education away from a family income and throws it in the sky on tobacco, it's the same with other drugs. It depletes the family resources, and then if the breadwinner is the abuser of the drug, then the breadwinner dies and then the family's got no income. And that occurs at all levels, and it's probably worse in the rural areas simply because that's where poverty and again, I'm speaking without deep knowledge of it. I think in the rural areas is where poverty is the greatest, because there's less employment, there's less industry, there's less commerce. How would I advise the minister? We'd have to look at outreach programs. Again, in tobacco control, and I said that the stuff that we do in reducing smoking prevalence is a package of many things. Probably at the lower end of the effectiveness of whatever we do is education in schools. It doesn't have a huge effect as, for example, banning advertising does, as putting graphic health warnings on packages, as the Minister of Health has indicated that he wants. So you need to have outreach programs, you need to have education, but it's not, in the work that we do, the most efficient, effective, and good use of resources to achieve a result. But it needs, that doesn't mean you must neglect it, it needs to be done.
I see here, Peter, you very much have the passion anti-smoking, but there's one thing that I always see, and just like you, that I always watch when I'm driving, people smoking when they drive with the kids inside the car. And people that are in this anti-tobacco, what do you do about those people?
Well, again, it's a matter of changing societal norms and the way people behave. The first thing that Parliament did is that they set the standard. And that's what Parliament has to do. And the standard is no smoking in cars when there's a child under the age of 12. At the December 2009, because the Act was brought into force in August 2009, in December that year in KZN, the police issued provincial and city police in Pietermaritzburg and Durban, and then the whole province, issued I think 150 fines to people who were driving with cars. So there is an element of law enforcement that's possible to do. But the other is that mothers who don't smoke and know the harms that can be caused to their children who smoke are not going to, I mean, there are already families that don't allow smoking in their home. I mean, some member of the family smokes. Very often it's the father, can't quit or doesn't want to quit, and so he smokes but outside, because the family says no, it's no good. So you set the standard, and everybody, everybody adapts, and the norms start to shift. So what I think happens, for example, let's say there's a school lift scheme, you know, five mothers taking everyone's kids to school Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. And let's say Auntie Mary on a Wednesday is a smoker out of the five mothers, and she's the only one who smokes. The other mothers are probably going to tell their children, do you know that Auntie Mary's not allowed to smoke in the car anymore? Now, if Auntie Mary smokes on a Wednesday on the way to school, I think one of two things are going to happen. Either the kid is going to say, Auntie Mary, my mommy says you can't smoke in the car. And that might even be the impetus to get her to call the quit line to quit smoking. We've had that. We've had that sort of thing. The other is that the kid doesn't want to say anything and goes home and says, you know, Mommy, Auntie Mary was smoking in the car today. And then Mommy's going to phone her and say, Mary, you know it's dangerous, it's bad for all our kids. If you don't stop the smoking in the car, we'll find someone else to do Wednesday's lift scheme. And so it's the social norms that shift, and people's demands for protection of health, and especially children, because their lungs and the brains and everything are developing, and it's hugely harmful. Richard Carmona, the United States Surgeon General, wrote, I mean, they write unbelievably thick reports. In 2006, Richard Carmona's report, his summary is four lines. I love it. I use it all the time because it just tells the whole story. His conclusion, little summary, is the debate is over. The science is clear. There's no safe level of exposure to secondhand smoke. The smallest exposure can be harmful. Now, that's a huge statement that was based on massive research, and I know some of the scientists who were involved in that research. Jonathan Samet, for example, who was then with the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health in Baltimore. now the Parliament has set the standard, because we know that secondhand smoke is harmful. And so mothers and others start to want their own standards implemented, because they now have the power. Previously, they didn't, in essence, have the power. So it's not always big law enforcement. It's not the police with a big stick. It's changing societal norms. And I think to a small degree that applies to the illegal drugs.
I think, Chair, we can talk and talk. Peter is a lecturer in many universities. He's very rich. One question that I would like to ask.
We're from NGO.
But you see, he's saying he's a lecturer, university.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, that's not stuff you get paid for. That's just fun I have. I mean, you get the other day I got a phone call from the School of Psychology Health at Wits University. They wanted to talk about hookah pipes, ugly bubblies, ochres. And so I went down and spoke to them, and it's exciting.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That you have, you know, rich experience. But there's one thing. Now I'm going to. You're talking about even happiness. Listen to her, we're talking about tobacco going to the brain and the cells and the membrane. So I'm listening to you with the anti-tobacco, and lately there is too much of bipolar with the kids. So I'm just thinking, because my husband was a heavy smoker, you know, he used to smoke even in the bedroom, and I never used to worry about this, and my kids were still young. But lately, it was not common, bipolar. But this day, it's so common, even with young kids. What is the connection between bipolar, the brain, the wife, the wife?
There is evidence to indicate that children of parents who smoke have higher incidence of things like bipolar, manic depressive, ADHD. Those sorts of conditions appear to be higher, and I would have to find the latest research on that, in children of parents who smoke than in children of parents who do not smoke. So there is a causal link. There's a link to that, that causes it or aggravates it, you know.
It causes
the fact. There's another thing. It seems to be higher in children and parents who smoke. It's the same with sudden infant death syndrome. It happens. The doctors don't even know why. Kids die in the first 2 years. Babies die in the cot death. They die. There's no full clear medical answer to it. But what we do know, that in children of parents who smoke, it's 35% higher than in children of parents who don't smoke. So there's another link. And you see, that's smoke that's in the home. But
I think I must take your number and keep on engaging you with many things.
With pleasure. With pleasure.
Thank you.
First thing is banning advertising, and there are differences between the drugs, but I think one of the steps is banning advertising, because what you've just said, you know, you're better at sports if you drink Casa Lager. I mean, that's the insane conclusion we have with our Proteas, who are now the world number one in cricket with Casa Lager. And that's why I so admire Hashim Amla, who said, I'm not wearing that, you can drop me from the team. He said that long ago. You see, there's no castle on Hashim Amla. And that's great. Sorry? So you take away that misleading, and in fact not only misleading, but some of it is downright dishonest advertising that tells you that, you know, real men drink Black Label. I don't know. That's the first step, I think. Wine has a different kind of romance. I read a statement the other day that wine is poetry in a bottle. Now, you can't let them advertise that. The difference, I suppose, between wine and other drugs, well, alcohol and other drugs, is that you and I can use alcohol. If we have a glass of wine, and that means 125 millilitres, or a tot of whiskey, in fact there's some research to indicate, and the doctors will tell you that it could be good for your heart and good for your health. You have to drink a bottle of whiskey and then get in your car and drive, and that's not only illegal but extremely dangerous. So you have to consciously abuse alcohol. But we need to take the misleading links between I drink this brand because it makes me tough, or I drink this brand because our kids think if they drink Castle they can play better cricket, which is nonsense. So banning advertising is the first step. So you kind of denormalize the levels at which alcohol is at the moment advertised and used. And then, again, looking at other countries and how they've handled it, and where they have alcohol problems that are serious and where they have alcohol problems that are less serious, and how they approach it, and then take that information, but solid information, not anecdotal evidence like, oh, you know, I was in Sweden or Greece or somewhere and I saw this. That's not evidence. That's anecdotal, and it might be an indicator of the truth, but you need hard, clear scientific research that's been published, that's been peer-reviewed. It's very important, because you will get research from the alcohol industry, and I look at the advertising, they say drink responsibly. The message is drink. I don't like that. I think that we have to ban that. That the alcohol industry and the gaming industry, that's also wrong. It's not gaming. Gaming is fun. That's gambling. It's a huge risk. The alcohol industry and the gambling industry run their own assistance service. They shouldn't do that. That should be run by independent, an NGO or by the government or something. That's where the help should be. For the alcohol industry to say drink responsibly, the message is drink. I hate that. But again, it's removing the kind of excitement and the misleading evidence of that. I drink Castles, I can play better cricket. Take that all away, and levels are likely to change. Look at other countries and see how they deal with what their alcohol problems are, and take that information, and if it's solid, and there's enough published peer-reviewed research, because the alcohol industry will end the tobacco industry. They do it, we know that. They give you research from scientists that they pay, and it's not accurate, it's not been peer-reviewed. Good stuff, and then you can advise the minister. And I'm sure that she will, like any minister, be delighted to have solid information and evidence that she can stand up in Parliament and say, I mean, any person likes this, it doesn't matter if it's a minister, anybody likes solid information that they can talk with confidence and that they can promulgate acts and the committee can approve those acts with confidence that they're doing good work, that they're getting good results and that they're effective. Thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it. Well, I've done lots of interviews, but what I said is I spoke to the Wits University School of, and they called it Psychological Health.
Do my own book. This is what you said. Interesting. And like, I'm an intern at school at the University of Manchester, England. And like, obviously being a student, like, I'm open to like all these things,
yeah.
And like drugs and everything.
Well, first of all, you can go to our website. Can you send me an email? I think my email address is on my CV and stuff.
I don't have your CV because I'm just interning. So they
okay.
Don't
okay. Okay. I don't have cards, but I'll give you my... You got my surname, UCKO.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's UCKO at iAfrica.com. And our office number is 011-725-1514. And my mobile is 082-454-9889.
If we go on your website, we can find information and stuff.
You will find, for example, a fact sheet that we developed, which has got 6 or 7 questions and answers about Hubbly Bubbly.
Okay.
www.againstsmoking.co.za.
Okay.
Against Smoking, one word.
Okay.
And there is information there, but if you want more, I mean, our cessation booklet that we posted is on the website.
Okay.
The printed copy is a little different, the images and so on, but the information is all there.
Yeah.
If you want copies of the booklet or you want copies of the fact sheet, we've also got a large poster that says Bookers are Deadly or something like that.
I don't know. Or smoking as well. But then someone has also told me that when she's in England, before she shot, she shot is worse than smoking. It's not addictive, but it's worse.
Well, no, it isn't addictive. It's tobacco. That's one of the questions. It's tobacco. It can be flavored with molasses and cherries and all sorts of things, but it's tobacco. It contains nicotine and it's addictive. Now, what happens in a group, and you'll see it on the fact sheet, everyone's like big sociable stuff. And when I see this, people smoke with a hookah, what do? And then, you have all the smoke. Now, that's me smoking. Now I give it to you. First of all, I don't stop breathing.
No.
I'm still can you go in the secondhand smoke and you're smoking and everybody else is smoking. Secondly, you don't know if I've got herpes or TB. And you can catch it from my mouthpiece.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of huge problems. Some research indicates that a session like an hour or so of smoking hookah is the same as smoking 100 cigarettes.
No.
Because they take such big long trips and then say in somebody's house and it's a closed room. So it's really dangerous, but it's addictive. Now the problem is that you smoke once a week with your friends.
Yeah,
it's good fun talking about what you're studying and everything you're doing, and you're going to go back to England or back your trip to South Africa, and then you socially sit there and you smoke the hookah, and it's all very nice, but you get addicted to nicotine. You can't carry the hookah with you to Parliament. Now you're going to buy cigarettes and smoke outside. Bad stuff, bad.
Thank you. I'm interesting.
Now what I must do is find the cab.
No, you didn't.